Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine radio station, as well as podcasting on the homepage of richarddugan.com, as well as the radio shows page of richarddugan.com. We're also on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio. We hope that you will go to many of these locations. Did I mention iTunes Radio? iTunes? Yes, I did. Go there, listen to these interviews, especially if you are only listening to the radio broadcast, because I tell you this every single program, these interviews, they could go longer than the 50 minutes that we allocate for the radio broadcast. And you're going to miss something integral for your life and your growth and your evolutionary process, as we like to say. And if you like what we're doing, if it resonates with you and you can support this program financially, we are greatly appreciative of that. We have a PayPal account both on the homepage and the missions page at richarddugan.com. And you can go there and you can support us with whatever amount you'd like. And it helps to just defray some of the broadcast costs that I pay out of my pocket, which I'm gratefully happy to do, but I can always use some help in that regard. So if you're able to do so, please do so. If not, that's fine. We'll take energetic support as well. Today, we are going to talk with a returning guest to our broadcast. It's been some time since he's been with us, but we're going to be talking about the Heart Reconnection Guidebook. And don't confuse this guest with another we've had on before with sort of a similar title, not quite the same. We're also going to be talking about a couple of websites. I'm going to give those to you right now. So we'll give them again as we move on. IntegrativeLifeCenter.com and SpiritRecovery.com. My guest is Lee McCormick. And Lee, I want to thank you so much for rejoining us here on the program and talking to us about this Heart Reconnection Guidebook and the work that you've been doing since the last time you were on the broadcast.
Yeah, Richard, man, it's good to be back with you.
Now, first of all, let's enlighten people who have not heard you before. And folks, he's been on the program before. All you have to do is go to the radio shows page or SoundCloud, and you can search for Lee McCormick, because we have him at least on the radio shows page. Find out more. But for those who are not familiar, tell us about the work that that you have been involved in. And literally, it's worldwide, because you travel quite often, taking people to, I don't want to necessarily say exotic places, but definitely energy centers, if you will, around the world to help them as well as the planet to not only heal, but to evolve and to grow and hopefully to change and make this world a better place.
Yeah. Gosh, I was introduced to changing my point of view on life and, you know, looking at myself differently, realizing there was a lot more to life than the first 40 years that I was on the planet, you know, and what I'd been taught as the official story. And so as I got into that on my own personal journey, it only took a few years, and, you know, and I got inspired and excited and started branching out and questioning the accepted paradigms in the recovery world and around the self-help scene, you know, and connected with great people and people that inspired me. And over time, you know, I've become a part of a few networks, and one thing has led to another, the way life rolls, you know. And so the Heart Reconnection book is the last of, I guess, a series of, you know, things that I've done and been involved in. And it's really my favorite, because this book is a collaboration, and it's a collaboration with a group of people that I really respect, you know, that have been inspiration in my life and have so much experience and so many different perspectives. And all of them are authentic and all of them are creative. And, you know, so we all came together in creating this book based on a conversation that we had at Joan Borisenko's house in Santa Fe about 3 years ago. And that's how the It's how the book came to be. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of work, though. You know, doing it, being a part of a collaboration, writing a book, period, is a lot of work. I don't consider myself a writer. I just write down what I think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a collaboration just requires, the editor, it takes a fantastic editor to be able to edit more than one voice together into a congruent thread, you know, and we have a fantastic editor. And it all worked, you know, and more will be revealed, as they say in the recovery scene, because this book is doing well and it's inspired. We're actually going to develop our own therapeutic modality that'll be heart reconnection therapy. And we're in the process of putting together the Heart Reconnection Institute. So it's a reframe of our relationship to ourselves and our relationship to life.
Well, I know that we're all trying to find that space, if you will, that reconnective space in our lives, but there are a lot of layers that some of us have to work through that have been placed there over, for some of us, for decades. My wife and I are watching this one particular program, for example, and these people are choosing to, at least initially, they make the choice to make a change in their lives. However, the challenges before them are, for them, monumental. I mean, some of them have to get on a plane and fly to this specific location in order to get the treatment that they're so desperately in need of. Otherwise, quite honestly, they could die within 3 to 5 months, if not sooner. And one gal, she got on the plane halfway and said, nope, can't do it. Got to get off. And then, of course, you know, they had to come up with alternatives and so forth. But what they began to start to get into was the whole, I'll call it psychological, if not spiritual, damage that they're dealing with, if you will, in order to be able to take on that challenge of saving their own lives. Is that something that you're finding? See, because I remember the 80s, we were in the victimhood phase of self-help. It's somebody else's fault. It's our parents' fault. Blame mom and dad for why I am where I am, right? And in the 90s, we began to take some responsibility, you know, and, you know, so forth. And then in the 2000s, and again, this is only as I've gauged it, we started to realize, oh, it's not mom and dad's fault. It's nobody's fault. This is the way that I am. I've got issues that I need to deal with and resolve so that I can move forward in my life. And then, and this is the only way I can describe this, Lee, in the 2016 presidential campaign, somehow we managed to go back to the 80s and victimhood again. It's somebody else's fault because of the problems that we have. And so I'm curious as to what your experience has been over the, not just the last 3 years, but maybe the last few decades, in terms of that kind of process and cycle that humanity has gone through or is still going through. Are we making progress?
Well, you know, yeah, of course we're making progress. Now, sometimes going backwards is progress, or what appears to be going backwards is progress, you know, because kind of like that old saying, you can't fool Mother Nature.
Right.
You know, if so much of the work that is done on a personal level, and so often we get kind of halfway through unraveling ourselves. You know, we engage in experiences or programs, different offerings that are there to help us, you know, heal ourselves or clean ourselves or raise ourselves up or evolve. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get some way through that process. And then our mind steps in and says, wow, we really got this figured out now. Or we get bored with the process because it's not happening fast enough. Or, you know, it gets down to the real dirty work, like the real depth of heart and soul level work. Mm-hmm. That's not fun to do.
Yeah.
And we change modalities. I see that all the time. You know, people are Buddhist for a while and then they jump ship and they go be they go to A Course in Miracles for a while, or they get into recovery and they do the 12-step thing for a while. But we're always flipping the script when it gets too close to home. So, you know, the going backwards thing actually can be a gift, because what it is it's aspects of ourselves that we never really healed and let go of.
Ah.
We may have rearranged our relationship with our woundedness, but have we actually let go of the identity that anchors us in that victim point of view that you spoke to? You know, just doing the work, just doing the emotional work, the psychological work, changing your lifestyle on the outside, you know, changing your story, all of that is great. It's part of the journey. And if we don't go deep enough to the core agreements or the core experiences that anchor all of the dysfunction in our lives, and consciously and intentionally let that energy go, let that story go, let that judgment go, then it's not really leaving us. We're just creating a more functional relationship with it.
So the way I'm hearing you describe this, which I like a lot, is that it actually, by, as you say, as we've kind of defined it, going backward, it's giving us an opportunity to go back and make sure that we've cleaned up all that we need to clean up in our own lives. And if we've missed something through that first time around, we're going to see if we can't get it the second time around. And you're right, it may not be easy. And you know, the old saying too, that, you know, you got to go through it. You can't go over it, under it, or around it. You've got to go through it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with, you know, with our emotions. We need to experience those emotions in order to get through them so that we can then move on. And I know that that's a big challenge for a lot of folks. So talk to me. I want to actually go back further than 3 years. I'd like to go back to the beginning of your process, your catalytic moment, if you will, if there was one, that said, I need to go in this direction. I need to be about not only helping and healing myself, but I need to help others to do the same, because I want a better world. I want a more, say, prosperous world, a healthier world. What was it? I heard a statistic, and this is just on one area of health and physical health, I'm trying to think of the terminology. In other words, the age at which most Americans are going to die is dropping because of a myriad of different things we won't get into. Talk to us a little bit about your process and where you are coming from, where you started from, and again, if there was that pivotal catalytic moment.
Yeah, you know, there's just a whole bunch of moments. And they're kind of all strung together over the last 21 years. So the choice that I made that opened this up was 22 years ago, when I made the choice to check myself into a treatment center. It was out in Arizona. I had been, you know, I was born in the late 50s and grew up in the 60s and 70s and grew up on the beach in Florida, started playing music, played guitar when I was 13, 14. You know, I was a surfer. My family had a ranch. So I was around cattle and horses and cowboyed and surfed and played guitar. And I grew up with more interest in a non-typical way of life. Like, I wasn't interested in becoming a businessman and going to an office and doing all that traditional thing. I love being outside and I love being connected to nature and I love the expressiveness of music. So I always pretty much live my life my own way as such. And the behaviors that came with that, you know, in the 70s, like I tell people around the recovery scene, you know, in the 70s, cocaine wasn't bad for you. Something happened in the 80s and they flipped a switch. It's kind of a joke with me, you know, but the drug and alcohol scene and all the partying, of course, you know, that carried on for several years in the music business. And then I got tired of the music industry and I quit and I got married. And the behaviors, of course, haunted me and followed me around. And then after I'd gotten divorced from my first marriage, I was 41. And, you know, I was just a mess. Like, I had all this baggage and all this stuff. I was on the surface pretty successful. You know, I was in the cattle business and had ranches and, you know, had a lot going on, trading commodities. And, but I was not happy. You know, I'd been a terrible husband to my first wife for 12 years because of those old behaviors. And I didn't understand, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? It was that trap that we can find ourselves in, that our life's out of control. We're not really happy with it, but we have no clue that it could be any different. So through a course of events, I went to a therapist. The therapist said, there's a place in Arizona I think you would really enjoy, and you could sort all this stuff out and, you know, learn how to recreate your life. And I said, sure. So I did that. And that's actually what happened. It opened a door to a new awareness of myself, to a level of responsibility that was positively oriented. You know, for me, for a long time, for a lot of us, if somebody says, well, you're completely responsible for yourself, it's usually because you're guilty. It's not necessarily a positive thing. And as I got into the recovery scene, I started getting, I guess you could say, spiritual hits on things. I started having feelings and awarenesses of connection to life and to other points of view other than, you know, our traditional recovery point of view, such as my name's Lee and I'm an addict. You know, my point of view became, my name's Lee and I'm not really sure what I am or who I am. And being 40 years old, I did know that at that point in my life, I was not interested in having the world define me again. I had struggled with that my whole life, trying to live up to the expectations of the world around me and basing my good enough with myself on acceptance and compliance with, you know, cultural rules or religious rules or all the stuff that comes with the legacy we inherit here. You know, so my relationship with recovery became a very creative relationship. And it inspired me. And I started looking for opportunities to broaden my awareness and to outgrow my issues and, you know, to engage in things that I was called to be engaged in. I got involved in sweat lodge ceremonies with a traditional Navajo healer, a Diné man in Arizona, and, you know, started going to Course in Miracles groups, and I did a lot of stuff. Life got really interesting, and our human experience got really interesting. So my inspiration was not that I wanted to save the world. It's that I wanted to figure out, what am I doing here and who am I really? And it's fun to do that with other people, more fun than it is to do it as a solo act, you know? And so I gravitated. Well, I've gotten involved in Miguel Ruiz's work years ago, you know, the man that wrote the Four Agreements, and went to Mexico on a Toltec journey to Teotihuacan. I just pretty much said yes to anything that felt right, you know, as opposed to made sense in my head. If it felt right, my deal with God was, you give me the opportunities to develop a greater relationship with life and sort this stuff out, you send me the invitations and I'll say yes. And a lot of stuff happened. So, you know, I enjoy it. I love it. It's been a continuously moving, evolving, changing landscape. And that inspires me. And I think that's how life rolls. Life's not a matter of finding fixed answers. That's not real. Life is finding a way to live with the flow of it and roll with it and love it and create it and be responsible for ourselves, you know, and share the good and the bad and the challenging with one another as we grow and evolve.
Mm. Well, I know that everybody has to find their own path. You certainly found yours through these types of programs. And I kind of went through some of the same kinds of things that you did as I was growing up I like to call it the metaphysical community, because it encompasses quite a bit. I went through a program called Life Spring back in the early 80s, which was similar to Est. I think that was it was an incredible experience, especially some of the things that I learned about myself as well as about humanity in general. And then there was a program that's still going on in Phoenix and around the country. If not, I think they've got Canada. It may be global by as far as I know. I'm still trying to get a hold of somebody there to have them on the program because it was incredible learning for me through a program called Omega Vector, and I believe it is now Delta, or it might be reverse Delta Vector. And it was started by a gentleman by the name of George Adair, who was a printer. He owned a print shop. Papago Printing, which is no longer in business. He, I think, has since passed away due to Parkinson's. But he was studying some incredible things and teaching people. And there was no set fee. I mean, yeah, they would ask you to contribute whatever you could, but basically everything was free. And then you could re-audit. I mean, hell, I could go back and retake the 1, 2, and 3 sessions. And then they would have these... monthly Monday evening get together, sort of like a booster shot. And it was wonderful. And of course, I've read a lot. I know you've probably read quite a number of books by a number of different people. And it's just been astounding. And in addition to this program that I've been doing now for so many years, going on 12 years, let alone interviewing since 1979. And it has just been extraordinary, and I still don't have all the answers. I'm still working on it, and that's why I'm having you on the program, because I know you have them, and I want to get them from you. So that, but folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Lee McCormick, and we're talking about basically taking that next step in our lives and reconnecting with who we are and who humanity is, if you will. It's the Heart Reconnection Guidebook that we're talking about. We're also talking about a couple of websites we want you to go to again, as I've said before, continue your evolutionary process, because that's really what it is about. And the first one is integrativelifecenter.com. And then there's spiritrecovery.com. And we'll be linked to those as well. So we encourage you to check those out. And we are going to continue talking with Lee here and find out more about some of the wonderful, not only gatherings, Lee, but I'd also like to talk about some of the experiences that you have had around the world as we continue talking here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're here with Lee McCormick, and we're talking about, of course, a lot of different things here, but spiritrecovery.com and integrativelifecenter.com. Lee, you've traveled the globe. You've gone to some incredible places. I personally, in my life, I've been out of the country 3 times, actually 4 times. 2 of them were cruises, so they don't really count in that respect. But the other 2 were wonderful experiences that I talk about often on this program, about going to Ireland and the experiences that we had there, both just vacation-wise, but also on that spiritual and or metaphysical level. It was just incredible. Talk to us about some of the places that you've been, but even more about those places that you find or have found that are the most beneficial energetically, because I know that there are these, they call them vortices. I know in Arizona there's Sedona and so forth. That have profoundly impacted you as well as the people that you take with you on these incredible journeys.
Well, sure. Well, Teotihuacan in central Mexico, outside of Mexico City, that's my heart home base, really. Teotihuacan was one of the largest cities on Earth 1,500 years ago. So over 200,000 people lived there. And literally, there's such a legacy to that place. There are a lot of caves underground where the pyramids are. The Pyramid of the Sun, Pyramid of the Moon, the Pyramid of Quetzalcoatl are all in Teotihuacan. And Teotihuacan was, in a sense, a university. It was a place of consciousness, of art of the becoming masters of every aspect of a human culture. So the farmers, the warriors, the weavers, the philosophers, the healers, every aspect of human life and culture was brought up to, you know, its highest level of awareness. And so indigenous people from North and South America traveled to Teotihuacan 1,500, 2,000 years ago to learn and to share. And there's an energetic there that's anchored in the earth, in those caves, underneath the where the ancient city is and all the temples and stuff are, that you just, you can't explain it. You have to experience it. You know, I still guide trips there. We're going back the end of April, going in July, going again in November. That's an incredibly powerful experience. You know, and at the same time, I can tell you, I was involved in some Native American, in a Native American church ceremony, and worked with a road man. That's what you call the leaders in Native American church ceremonies. And we would just go out in the middle of the desert somewhere in Arizona, and there was no TV, no house, no nothing, you know, and hold the all night prayer ceremonies. And I have a sweat lodge on the river here in Tennessee that we're in our eighth year of the first Sunday of the month. We hold a lodge. I've been doing that for 8 years and we've not missed a month, you know, and that particular spot, that little piece of ground, that lodge, the fireplaces, the that whole little geographical spot on the map that sits on Piney River. When you show up at that lodge and you get out of your car and you walk to over to where the lodge is on the bank of the, above the bank of the river, I mean, you feel it. And so what I've come to realize is that, you know, we humans are incredibly powerful and we're not taught that. We're powerful in an energetic sense. We're powerful in the sense of the energy that we carry imprints in the places that we frequent. Same thing is, you know, if you go into some of the 500-year-old churches in Mexico or South America, I've never been to Europe, but I know it's got to be the same thing. You know, you go into one of these 500-year-old Catholic churches, and some of them feel amazing and some of them feel horrible. And if you study the history of that church and what's gone on there, it becomes pretty evident, you know, what that energetic is and where it came from. You know, I know the church is dedicated to the mother, dedicated to the Virgin of Guadalupe or Tonantzin or Mary, that have hundreds of years of faith and prayers and love and suffering that have been brought there by the people that, that, you know, come there with all their love and their faith. You feel that energy. So we humans create these holy places, these sacred places with our love and our prayers and our intentions. And then on the other side, in the parallel dimensions, if you want to call it that, or in the spirit world, you know, the beings that are there, they come to us in that same way. So we really, for me, the sacred places, the holy places, we create them, and then our intent is met and matched by the spirit people that are with us, that, you know, whether you want to call them spirit guides or angels or ancestors, you know, we create bridges between the worlds with our energy and our awareness and our prayers. And that's largely been, it's just been wiped out of modern man's culture. You know, modern man, we're completely obsessed with the physical world and we are completely out of balance in that our relationship to life is limited to our mind's interpretation, to intellect, to knowledge and information. We're not raised and we don't typically live with as much attention in our heart center and our spirit and our soul and our intuition as we do live with attention based in our thoughts and our judgments and our beliefs. So there's two different aspects to us as humans. You know, there's the spirit side of us, the consciousness side of us, and then there's the intellectual reasoning, knowledge side of us, and judgment side of us, and they're very different frequencies. One is directly connected to the eternal, one is directly connected to spirit, and the other is like the seat of the matrix, this human matrix we live in that we call reality that man has made up. That's really the point of the Heart Reconnection guidebook, you know, is to reintroduce people that, you know, we have a choice in where we're going to live our life from, and to change the quality of the experience of our life, we're responsible to change where we're living our life from and the frequency of the beliefs that we're carrying around and the judgments that we're holding on to and all that baggage and legacy that we inherited, you know, and we can evolve out from under that stuff. We can step into it and unravel it and rediscover a new relationship with how it feels being me or how it feels being you, you know, and then it's your journey. Then it's your experience. It's your responsibility and your choice. Rather than being told, well, this is what it needs to look like, and this is exactly how you do it. Man's been trying to pass responsibility for our relationship to ourselves and our relationship to God or light or spirit. We've been trying to pass that off to other people or believe that someone else can answer those questions for us for thousands of years. And it's not working because it's not congruent with what my experience has been and the truth of what we really are. We each have that ability within us, and we each have that responsibility.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I found a great deal of frustration when I was working for a Christian radio station for 15 years. And when good things happened, oh, that was God. And when bad things happened, that was the devil. And it's like, what? You know, that makes no sense. You know, either we're responsible or we're not, kind of like being pregnant. You either are or you aren't, you know, there is no in between. And I finally came up with that wonderful analogy that I've mentioned on this program about a person walking in this meadow, and they have their hands cupped in front of them, and in their hands, in that cup, they're holding their personal will, as if you could remove it, and just saying, I want to do God's will, I want to do God's will, and they toss it in the air. And God is moved to tears that one of his own creation, and of course this is based upon, you know, one of the old paradigms, if you will, but nonetheless, and he catches that person's will and he's compressing it while tears are flowing down his face, and he finally compresses it down about the size of a baseball, hurls it back, hits the person in the forehead with the ball and says, then do something with the life I gave you. You are not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand. And I still believe that to this day. And so what you're saying is that we can, through our own power, this power that you talk about, and again, we're not talking about a power that we are going to use against others, you know, or to control others. This is a power that we will allow to flow through us. That's really what we're talking about, isn't it? This divine power.
Well, it is. It's not, you know, our world operates on a power over, from a power over point of view. That if you're successful, then you have power over people or markets or weather. Or look at our culture. The whole thing is based in man's power over all these variables in the world. And power over is how you achieve wealth. And, you know, you gain enough knowledge and you get the right degrees and you become a brilliant business person. It's all inside out. So what I'm talking about is the power we hold through the true nature of our own heart and spirit. You know, you could say it's the power of love, but the term love has kind of been dumbed down. You know, I'm not talking about romantic love. I'm talking about, which it includes that.
Sure.
But I'm talking about the power that we hold simply through the nature of what we give our attention to. You know, if a human being chooses to give their attention to any particular situation over and over and over and over again, every time you give your attention to something, you're giving it energy.
Yes.
Through the nature of our focus and our attention, we're feeding it. Mm-hmm. And we're not taught to understand how powerful we are, and that, in fact, the frame of what I call my reality, Lee's world, the frame of Lee's world exists the way it does because of the nature of what I've given my attention to, what I've come to believe, and how I've come to live in relationship to those aspects that make me human. And those aspects are my relationship with my mind and my thoughts and my beliefs, my relationship with my emotions and my feelings and my intuition, and my relationship to my heart and my spirit. You know, my relationship to my etheric self, if you want to call it that, or my higher self, and my relationship with my physical body. So those are the aspects that make me human. Well, when you're raised and acculturated and domesticated to believe that in order for you to have value, you have to prove it in the external world, and you have to gain approval in the world, and you have to prove your goodness to the world and earn that value. It's basically, without saying it, what we're acting out as is that we have no innate value just by the fact that the Creator gave us a life here, right? God created us, if you want to use the term God. God created us. We were given a life in this world. We're here as a human being. And in that alone is our value. And from that point forward, it's a matter of how we choose to live this life. And like you said earlier, you know, I believe we do have free will. And I do believe that we are 100% responsible for the quality of our life, for the choices that we make, for, you know, what we carry forward. We're 100% responsible for that, but not from a place of judgment. We're responsible for that because that equates to the experience that we're going to have, to the quality of the experience we're going to have, you know. And, you know, one path is the way of the world, which says you must be compliant first. And if you're not compliant with the world's demands, then you're selfish and you're bad and you're never going to be okay. And the other path says, you know, you were created to be exactly who you are. And the journey of life is the discovery of your gifts and your talents and what you love and your passions, and how you would choose to express yourself into this world and to love life. Like, you know, what's in you that inspires you to want to live and love the life that you're creating, waking up to in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting too. There's a biblical passage, and hey, I may be taking that out of context, but I paraphrase that in the New Testament, it basically goes, resist not evil. And when I read that, even in the context that it was written, I thought, well, it sounds like there's this wall in front of you. And I found this goes to your description of giving those things power that maybe we don't really want to, but we unintentionally do it. Instead of standing there and beating against the wall and pushing against the wall and trying to climb over to go around it or go under it because you're giving the wall the power, I say resist not evil. Turn your back and walk away and use those energies of yours that flow through you for the things that you want to have come about. And I can attest to experiences in my life where, back in November of 2018, I was involved in a non-injury car accident that totaled my vehicle. I was not at fault. I was found not at fault. And it turns out that I'd been wanting to, and my wife, both of us, had been wanting to get a truck because of where we live, you know, and so forth. Well, voila. Within 1 month of that accident, we had a truck, and we love it. And you know, it's funny. I don't know about you, but every time I would think about the monthly payment on the vehicle that we were driving at the time, you know, thinking, well, it's not that high, but, you know, okay, there it is, and I got to do that. And then, of course, there's the insurance. When I think about those two items with this truck, I get excited because this thing, you know, it's stuff, granted, has come into our lives. And so we put our energies into those things. Instead of me getting angry and frustrated at the guy who hit me and the inconvenience for the month and all of this different stuff and waiting for this reimbursement and that payment, I just said, you know what, you know, just leave it be. And it goes back to when I bought my first house. I mean, I actually, with my first wife, bought my first house. And I told her, I said, on September 1st, I says, I want you to keep in mind, no matter what happens in this process, the goal that we are going to keep repeating over and over again is we're buying a house. We're buying a house. And we had things that popped up. And we just reminded, we're not here to fight the insurance company. We're not here to fight the title company. We're not here to do this, that, or the other. We're buying a house. That's it. End of story. So whatever we need to do to make this happen, we're going to do. And within literally 30 days, we were in that house.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at our world today. And look at the nature of how we have been domesticated to live. Our attention gets hooked so easily by any kind of conflict. And we hold this deep-seated insecurity that we've been taught and that we inherited in our culture, that for us to be okay, for you to have value, for me to have value, for me to be okay, I have to be right. I have to make the quote-unquote right decision, which means that I'm living my entire life looking at the world and myself always through a filter of judgment. I'm judging everything. Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this good? Is this bad? And that judgment becomes the dominant force in my life. And that's what I'm engaging in consciously all the time, is how does it feel according to right, wrong, good, bad, right? So then the mind loves that. The mind is the seat of judgment. The mind's really good at judging. The heart doesn't judge. The mind judges continuously. And so if you look at our world, you look at the political landscape today. Look at the federal government today. Well, of course they can't accomplish anything because everybody's fighting over their very incredibly shallow self-serving interest, and they're framing all of the dialogue in right, wrong, good, bad. And there's no sense of responsibility for the quality of anything. It's all about winning. And we live our individual lives in that same sense until that way of life, of course it's uncomfortable. Of course there's no resolution to it. Of course there's no good enough and no peace, because nowhere in the equation is peace or personal freedom a part of the conversation. It doesn't exist in that entire matrix. Nowhere in there does that exist. And so it's uncomfortable. It's frustrating. It's destructive. It's a nightmare. It's literally becomes hell on earth because it's one continuous projection of judgment and fear and anger and resistance, you know, and we have wars against this and a war against that. I've never seen peace arrive because a war was won. Peace arrives because you decide to stop the fighting,
mm-hmm.
right? And that same dynamic exists within us because that's what the way we've been programmed to live life, you know? Yeah. So if we want a better quality life, if we want to love ourselves, if we want to love the world we live in, and we want to live a life that's satisfying and peaceful and inspiring, then we each individually are responsible to change the frequency of what we're giving our attention to.
You know, it's interesting that I've actually come to the observation also that the aspects of freedom, liberty, privacy, individuality, they're not wrong and they're not bad, but strictly from a spiritual and metaphysical standpoint, they're irrelevant. They are from my perspective, they're irrelevant, because when you think about Lee McCormick and Richard Dugan, we are here. How we got here, we may not know. We may not fully understand how we got here, but the fact is we're here, right? And we both have this sense that our lives have meaning, right, Lee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ergo, we have a life's purpose. But my life's purpose is not the same as Lee McCormick's life purpose. But what's so fascinating to me is how interwoven our life's purposes are. Here we are now conversing about this. You're here on this radio program, and I'm here wanting to share what you are all about with others so that they can seek you out if it resonates with them to, again, begin continue their evolutionary process. even though we may not fully understand what the big picture is, we're still about our life's purpose. And so this, and that's one of the reasons I did not name the radio program The Richard Dugan Show. Okay. It is not about me. It is about what Lee is doing and what Richard is doing to try to make this a better world and trying to help other people to do the same thing. So from that standpoint, for me, and as far as privacy is concerned, hey, look, whatever you want to call it, God or the universal power already knows all of my light and dark sides. What difference does it make if 7.6 billion other people know? And to that, most of them don't care. They just don't care.
You know, it's very indicative of just how much fear is woven into yes. the fabric of what we've been taught life is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many of our choices, our entire culture is just wrought with fear. And fear is used to motivate. Fear is used to inspire. You know, fear is used as a tool. It's used to manipulate us. And we feed on it because we were raised on fear.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a pathetic diet, but once you develop an appetite for a particular frequency of emotion or energy, then until we find the opportunity to question, why do I keep giving my attention to these things? Why do I keep indulging in these behaviors? Why do I keep reacting the way I do? Until we have the opportunity, as you said a minute ago, to step into that wall and question it and sit with it, not just look for a answer, but literally go into that place of confusion and conflict and sit there, you know, develop a relationship with it so that more might be revealed to us, because more will be revealed when we step into our conflicted places, our fearful places, you know, our suffering. Suffering is an interesting thing, man. Culturally in the U.S., if you suffer in any capacity, somebody's got something that they can sell you to reduce your suffering, mm-hmm. whether it's religion or a pill or a degree or a better job or, you know, blame it on the Mexicans or blame it on the Republicans or blame it on the Democrats. We're always projecting away from our suffering because we've not been taught that your suffering is an invitation from life to pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah,
I created my suffering. You know, that we individually create our emotional sufferings. Now, there's physical suffering that comes from, you know, having cancer or breaking a bone or, you know, there's the literal physical aspect of suffering and pain. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we're suffering from in the greatest sense. We're suffering from emotional disease and judgment and fear. And we're not taught that the way out of suffering is through your suffering. You know, go sit with it. Learn to stop judging and projecting and learn to sit and see what's the truth that's underneath that friction and that conflict and that judgment. Because there is a truth there. And we have to discover that for ourselves. You can't answer my questions around that. I can't answer your questions around that. We each are responsible for coming to our own resolution. You know, and that is actually an aspect of the integrity of life. But we're so freaked out, mm-hmm. we're so freaked out that we can't stay with anything uncomfortable long enough to resolve it. We want to medicate it. You know, hence, look at all the addiction issues, eating disorder issues, mental health issues.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too. I was curious in your research and, of course, your travels around the world in these different places, including the place you mentioned that is the most profound for you. Have there been periods of time in civilization, maybe going back thousands of years, where they were connected and they didn't have to deal with all of this stuff? Because every so often you see a modern man come across a tribe deep in the wilderness somewhere, whether it's in Brazil or wherever it might be, and they are happy as a lark. They don't have a care in the world, and they don't have technology, and they don't have all of the modern conveniences that we have. But boy, they're doing fantastic, and they're not dealing with the psychological and or spiritual, let alone physical maladies and dis-ease that modern man is dealing with. Are there civilizations that have, I don't want to say that have gone beyond it, but that haven't gone where we've gone? Because this is a place where no man should go.
Well, sure. I mean, I think there are. You just name some. The thing about this world that we're born into and the legacy that we inherit, you know, human beings, we seem to be very vulnerable to falling under our own spells.
Mm.
We decide we believe something, and then we give our faith to that belief. Then we hold that belief up, and we keep telling ourselves, this is right, this is right, this is right. And then we find other people that'll step in with us and say, yes, we're right. Our point of view is right. Our belief is right. We're all right. We're all right. Well, we give that so much energy that it literally becomes a god, you know, and then we completely lose context that, wait a minute, where did this start? Oh, it started because I decided that I was going to believe that, right? It started with me. It's a projection of my mind. And then it becomes a projection of our collective mind. We invented it. We created it. But then we hold that belief up and we deify it and we say, well, this belief is now going to keep us safe. And we're willing to go to war over this belief because if our belief's not right, then we're not going to be okay. And we have to defend our belief. You know, humans are, and we clearly don't know where we come from.
No.
I have no idea where we come from.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a tendency to be incredibly self-indulgent and to be incredibly culturally indulgent in these beliefs and these dreamed up matrix like relationships to life that we create, but then we project into them for so long that we abandon responsibility for the fact that, you know, this way of living is our creation and we're responsible for it. The creation we've made up is not responsible for us. And you see that today in the United States that, you know, look at all the people, well, we're not going to do anything about gun control because, by God, if we don't all have our guns and if we don't protect that right, then we're all going to be murdered and die and be killed and you know, whatever kind of madness you want to go with. Mm-hmm. And we do the same thing. If we don't have $2 gas or $3 gas, if we can't burn all the fossil fuels we want, then that's an infringement upon our freedom. And we absolutely have the right to completely poison the environment in any way, shape, or form we choose because we value cheap gas over being healthy. And, you know, you relate it literally. We have an epidemic of autoimmune diseases and cancer among the humans today. And it's primarily in the Northern Hemisphere, which happens to be North America,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we are the quote unquote developed nations. And we're exposed in the United States to over 80,000 synthetic man-made chemicals every single day in the air and in the water and in the food. And it's even to the point that if you eat organic food, you're still getting those chemicals because it's in the ecosystem. You can't get away from it. Now, you know, commercially grown foods that's loaded up with pesticides and stuff, of course, it's a higher concentration. It's a worst case scenario. But the truth is, the entire human population in North America is subjected to such a challenge to our immune system from birth to death that we have now epidemics of autoimmune diseases that are unprecedented. Well, that's a direct cause and effect in a reflection of the basis of our relationship to life, that our story of life is more important to us than being a witness to the truth and the cause and effect of what we're doing here. The old Native Indigenous tribes, they lived a direct relationship with creation. They knew that the wind is alive. They know the water is conscious. They know the trees and the animals are other aspects of the same creation that we are, and we're not separate from one another. And they lived in relationship to all creation from a place of respect. And it was a community. The community wasn't just the humans. The community is all creation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so their life and their world and their health was in balance. Well, our life and our world and our health is a train wreck because of the way we've isolated ourselves out from and away from living with awareness and respect for life. We respect our opinions more than we respect life, and we're willing to kill over our opinions.
There was a documentary my wife and I just saw of a chemical company in 1945 that developed a nonstick surface for pots and pans. Yep. And they knew within less than 5 years that this was toxic, but they did nothing about it. And this has been going on literally for 30 or 40 years. It turns out that they did a 7-year study globally, taking blood samples from people around the world. And the chemical, the specific chemical, they call it C8, turns out it's in the blood of almost every human being on the planet, with only a few exceptions. And it causes a minimum of 3 specific diseases. And I sit here going, so is this something that's permanent within the human being, or is there going to come a time, a generation, where eventually it will be diluted out and we'll be free of it? But then again, as you just stated, the volume of these toxic chemicals that we're exposed to on a daily basis, so you get rid of one. Now you got 797,999 to go. And we've talked, of course, about, especially with a great friend, Greg Braden, about, you know, the five, and now here we are in our 6th cycle, and whether or not we're going to make it through or not, whether we're going to repeat again for the 6th time the complete annihilation of mankind. And it seems like, I think that's where we're headed, and it's really unfortunate, but I try to stay as optimistic as possible. I'm not going to stop doing the work I'm doing. Because I honestly believe that it's still possible, even to change the hearts and minds of the people in these mega corporations and in the government and in the educational and religious institutions. They're still human beings, right? I mean, this is the hard in the context of difficult and cold fact and truth, that regardless of what you may think of your politicians, corporate heads, religious and educational and economic institutions, these are still human beings. They're not dead.
Yeah, no. We are, and we're all in it together.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And we to get hooked into the thing of blame and pointing fingers, there's that never solves anything.
Doesn't serve anybody.
You know, it's and people are just trying to do their best, you know, and so my point of view around it and the basis of the work that we do, you know, for our world, for our human relationship to life, to come back into balance and come back into a place of respect and evolve beyond where we are, it's going to have to be each of us, one person at a time, one day at a time, taking responsibility for ourselves and taking responsibility for the choices that we're making day in and day out. It is a bottom-up transformation. Mm-hmm. It will not be a top-down transformation. Yeah.
There is no trickle-down in this one. It's a trickle-up.
Dude, what's trickling down, you don't want to drink.
No, not at all, not at all.
Want that Kool-Aid.
Lee McCormick, I want to thank you for giving us so much time here on the program. This has been a great fun. It's, again, great to have you back on the program after so long. And I hope that we can do this again sooner rather than later, because you've got so much to offer, especially through the 2 websites that you have. And the first one is, of course, spiritualrecovery.com. And I'm looking at a lot of the works that you have available. You have some books, and one in particular entitled Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. And of course, we've been talking today about heart reconnection and the guidebook. We have a spirit recovery journal. You also have a CD, Songs of the Lodge and Dreaming Heaven. I think that was when we had you on the program the first time, talking about Dreaming Heaven. I want to jump in real quick here before we wrap things up, though. I want to ask you, because you talked about the Native American connection. And to me, Songs of the Lodge, I think I've only participated in one sweat lodge. And I'll be honest with you, and I was born and raised in Phoenix, so I'm familiar with 110 degrees. but it's a heck of a lot hotter in a sweat lodge than 110 degrees. And I couldn't make it. I'm not ashamed of saying that. And they even reassured me, do not be ashamed of the fact that you have to leave the sweat lodge. You know, you got through it and toughed it out as best you could, and you learned what you learned about yourself. And that was the goal.
Well, you know, the lodge is a living place. How do I say it? It's like a sweat lodge is a living place. It's a being that you develop a relationship with going into that space. It, for lack of a better term, it's a shift from the realm of the world that we live in on a day-to-day basis today in modern man's mind, and you're shifting into a multidimensional place. So you develop a relationship with that space, and you develop a relationship with the heat and with the experience of being there. So yeah, man, if you know, leaving the lodge, there's no shame in that. And if it inspires you in some capacity, then you keep coming back. Like they say in AA, you know, you keep coming back, and you'll develop a relationship, and more can be revealed through that space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I lived in a sweat lodge for 46 years living in Phoenix.
I hear you. I was in Phoenix last week, as a matter of fact. Actually, I was in Sedona last week.
Oh, that's a beautiful place. I'm saddened, though, by the fact that it's been really developed, and it's not as pristine as it used to be from that standpoint. It's not an ugly place. Don't get me wrong. It's still a beautiful place to go. But I remember as a young person, a teenager even, and in my 20s and 30s when I would go up there with family or friends, just how beautiful it was. And you didn't have curbs. You know, for example, as you're going past Bell Rock, the street was paved, but there were no sidewalks or curbs. Now there are sidewalks and curbs. And it's a little disconcerting. But nonetheless, you know, this is one of those energy centers that a lot of people flock to. I've been told by a reliable source here in Santa Barbara, he's a member of the Chumash tribe, and he says that our area here on the South Coast is one of those energy centers. But let me ask you to address this. One of the things he said to me was, he says you, and he was speaking directly to me, but not exclusively, he says, you people who are here now, you are the new Chumash. He wasn't incorporating us necessarily into the tribe per se, but he says, you, by virtue of living here and being affected by the energies here and raising your consciousness, you're the new generation of people that is going to keep this going. Talk to us a little bit about that.
You know what? It's a really good friend of mine that lives down in Malibu, a man named Miguel Rivera. Miguel is Guatemalan originally. He's lived in the States forever. Miguel said to me one day, he said, you know what indigenous means? And I said, no, I guess I don't. He said, indigenous means of the earth. And he said, every single human is indigenous to this earth. We all belong to her. Our bodies come from this mother, from the mother earth. And each one of us has it's like an equal opportunity employment thing. Mm-hmm. We each have an equal opportunity invitation to get to know and develop a relationship with the spirit people, with the sun, with the wind, with the trees. You know, it's not exclusive. It's inclusive of every human on the planet has by the grace of our life and our form and our being here, we are all on an equal basis to choose to develop relationships with that that is beyond the scope of just our mind, right? And we each have a responsibility to that if we want to change the frequency and the quality of life on Earth among the humans. Then the humans need to wake up again to the truth of what we really are, which is so much greater than all these little labels and definitions and projections and the way we've siloed ourselves. You know, that these people are Latino and those people, of course we are. Of course we're all unique and we have different legacies and different epigenetic imprints that we inherit when we're born into this world. Greg Braden talks about that a lot.
Yeah.
Right. And at the same time, we are all in spirit of the mystery. None of us know where we come from. Yeah. We can believe what we want to believe. For a fact, we do not know where we come from, and we do not know where we're going.
Exactly.
And we have an opportunity to live in relationship to that mystery and allow life to teach us and show us and reveal to us, which changes everything. You know, it just changes everything. That's great that that man said that to you.
Yeah. Now, to that end, would you say that that particular perspective, okay, can help us, let's say, God forbid, I'm sitting there watching the news again like this. I'm sitting there watching the news, and this guy comes up on the screen, and he's saying all these things, and there's a soundbite, right? And all of a sudden, those energies start to churn in me, going, oh my God, this guy again, you know. Taking that perspective, you can shift that energy and not get so wound up, because for me, for example, 2016, September, I got sucked into that process, right? It took me 6 months to get unsucked, as I say. And it was, I think it was March of last year of 2018, where I was actually able to say, teacher, I thank you for teaching me how I do not want to behave. A few months later, I was then able to say, I forgive you and I forgive me for allowing myself to be drawn into this energetic whirlpool. And I really, you know, I really try not to take any emotional position when I hear whatever's going on, you know, because I know that it's not serving me, and it's certainly not serving the people around me as far as that energetic that I put out. Is taking on that perspective something that will help us to do that when we remember that we're all made of, as the phrase goes, we're all made of stardust?
Well, I think so. I mean, at the lowest common denominator level, when we stop engaging in the judgment and the reactions and the projections, the moment we engage in these judgments and reactions and projections, we cut ourselves off from the true reality. And it's like we agree to just stick our head down this rabbit hole because that's where I'm going with my attention. And when I go there, am I available for spirit to speak to me? Am I available for a greater point of view? Am I able to raise myself up to be a witness to this whole dynamic as opposed to being a willing participant in the angst of it? You know, so I think, you know, we got to recreate our relationship with life one person at a time, mm-hmm. and one choice and one day at a time, man. And it's so compelling because we've been raised on that drama and that angst and that fear and that anger. You know, it's alluring when you've developed an appetite for it, man. And they just keep feeding it to us. Look at the nature of the news today.
Yeah.
Everything is about a killing or a murder or a wreck or everything is a frequency of death and suffering and fear. And it's just continuously being fed to us through, you know, through the media channels. Well, if people, if 50% of this country just turn their TVs off, I guarantee you the nature of what's presented in the news would change. Hmm. You know, it's a dance that we're doing.
Yeah.
And making it wrong and bad serves absolutely no purpose. You're feeding it. Just, you know, what do you want to do with your life? What do you want to give your attention to? What do you want to create as your reality?
You know, I was driving home the other day, and we had a cloud cover. It wasn't overcast, but it was high clouds and so forth, and the sun was blocked out. And it reminded me of those fall and winter days back in Phoenix when I was a kid. The grass was all dead in the front yard. It was yellow. And kids would go out and either play kickball or football. Or soccer maybe, you know, but we were playing and our street was set up to where it was a T section at both ends. So if a car came around a corner, we had enough time to, you know, get out of the street, and there were no fences absolutely on either side of the street. And so you had yard after yard after yard, not to mention the street that you could play in. And it was on those days when it was cloudy like that. And I'm driving home the other day, and the clouds were just like that. And that feeling just came over me of, oh yeah, I remember that was so much fun. Not only the cool air, but we were out there playing and having a grand time. And I thought I sometimes try to think about that when I get myself stuck into these spaces, these emotional places. Say, hey, wait a minute, you know, life is good. You know, I mean, think about, yeah, go ahead and think about the past. That's all right for now. Don't get stuck there. But and then you bring it back to the present and you look around and go, yeah, boy, this is nice. I like this. This is great. Where I'm at right now in the present moment. It's and that to me, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, is the universe throwing those little tidbits at me saying, hey, remember over here to help me to shift that energy flow.
Well, you know, we have a responsibility to participate in the world as it is. Sure. If we want the world as it is to be something different, right? If you want, we have a responsibility to support the things that we believe in. And at the same time, we can support and make choices and vote and be engaged and protest or not. We can be engaged like that. The choice point is in realizing that I'm fulfilling a responsibility I have. I'm not losing myself to these emotions or these arguments or these angers. I'm maintaining my independence from all that because that's all a matrix, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I lose myself to it, then I lose my power to actually be the change. So at first, we need to be the truth of who we really are, discover our heart and spirit, reconnect to our heart and spirit, start creating a life intentionally that we love living, you know, treat others as we want to be treated. And then we have a responsibility to be in the world, but not of it. I mean, you know, a lot of stuff Jesus said is pretty applicable here, you know, and to watch this insanity go on. And I mean, how often can you say, you know, forgive me, Father, I know not what I'm doing, but forgive them, Father, because they sure don't know what they're doing either, evidently.
Yeah, well, we do need to come to that space where we can observe and then send the kinds of energies that we really want to make a difference in this world. And that's what this program's about, and I know that's what you're about. Lee McCormick, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program, sharing the ideas that you have. I want to remind our listeners of your websites. And the first one that we have is, of course, the website spiritrecovery.com. You can find out about a lot of the work as well as some of the materials that are available, get in connection with Lee, and then also find out more about the wonderful work they're doing through integrativelifecenter.com. They're dealing with all kinds of different issues from mental health, eating disorders. Addictive treatment program is one of the things they have, and you can read about them and connect with them. And if you're in need or you know someone who is, then touch base with them. We are really would like for them, you folks to do that. And Lee, should you be traveling around the world and just find yourself on a layover here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. This is quite honestly some great stuff, and we really want people to get involved.
Well, Richard, I appreciate your time, man. I really do.
And then before we let you go, I just want to remind our listeners that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, there's more to this interview. So please go to the podcast, either SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, as well as the homepage of richarddugan.com and the radio shows page. And if you can support the broadcast, we're greatly appreciative of that with the PayPal account that we have on the homepage and the missions page. And Lee, before we let you go, three final questions for you. And again, my thanks for giving us so much time. First question is, who is Lee McCormick?
Oh, I'm just a guy who's cruising through the world trying to, I'm a man who's cruising through the world doing the things that I love and doing my best to treat other people the way I want to be treated.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Inspire people to want to live their life by choice and by awareness, and to share in community. I just love sharing in community with people.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To get out of here alive, man.
Well, I will share with you quickly what my father, I quote him quite often on this one and others. He has told me years ago, he says, eat, drink, and be merry in moderation because nobody gets out of this world alive.
Well, I say that as kind of a joke because my buddy Daniel Brinkley, you know, Daniel, first thing he ever says when he speaks is, I just want you to know everything you've been taught about death was not true. There is no such thing.
And you know what? I would agree with him because I understand where he's coming from. And we've had him on this program as well. So I would agree with you there that I would like to step into the next world, whatever that is. And even if it is just darkness, in other words, the lights turned out and that's it. I don't think that's what it is. I'm hoping like you that there is more after this. But I certainly would like to leave this place a better place than when I came into it. And I honestly believe that we can do that. I really do. So, again, my thanks to you for your energies, your efforts, as well as the websites. Again, they are spiritrecovery.com as well as integrativelifecenter.com. And, Lee, thank you again for joining us on the program. We look forward to having you back again.
You bet, Richard. Take care, bro.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.